Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and this week I'm joined by Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Pat. I'm good. Yeah, I was just talking to you off air about it. I've just had my birthday this weekend, so I'm a little bit tired from all the celebrating, all the food and all the drinks. But yeah, feeling a year older, but not sure about a year wiser. How are you doing?
I'm sorry, Diggs, I completely missed your birthday. How old are you now? Are you 25?
I am 27. 27.
What?
I know, it's crept up. It's crept up. I'm starting to look more like my appearance, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
27 now. I was thinking about this over the weekend. Although I do look very old, you guys are going to have that freak out in like 10 years' time, whereas I've pretty much done all my aging. I'm completed it almost. And now I just need to wait for everyone else to catch up. So it's not the end of the world. But yeah, 27, looking 47.
But on the plus side, I mean, the good thing about aging is that as a man, it is like famously much easier. I think that a lot of men kind of peak like in their late 30s, early 40s. So I'm hoping, yeah, I've got some time yet before the full crisis.
I think I peaked at about 18, I think, really. It's just been downhill ever since.
Well, anyway, happy birthday to you, Diggs. God, you're 27. How old am I going to be this year?
31?
I'm
going to
be 30. I'm going to be 32 this year.
Wow, God.
No.
It's this time in lockdown, it just creeps up at that age.
I was trying to get to my, one of my social media accounts, and I typed in my name, and I accidentally just Googled it instead of it auto-completing. So. Accidentally Googled myself. I've obviously done it on purpose in the past, but this time it was genuinely an accident. And it showed me like some like famous birthdays website or whatever, where it said I was born in 1988. It said that I was already 32 and I was going to be 33 this year. And I was like, this is bullshit. I can't believe this. As if I don't feel old enough now that, you know, I've spent my weekend like painting a nursery. Like putting things up in the baby's room.
I was going to ask, actually, have you found out the gender? Because my sister's also pregnant and they've just found out the gender. So I was wondering whether you had.
Yeah, we found out back at Christmas. We're having a little girl.
Oh, I'd forgotten that then. That's very exciting.
Right, oh, well, exciting. I'm really pleased. We were both kind of hoping for a little girl. So that's worked out quite nicely. What's your sister having?
She is having a little girl too.
Oh, nice. I think last year was a boy year.
Oh, okay, fair enough. They say in London as well, we're getting very distracted from the football, but they say in London as well that the amount of estrogen in the water apparently makes it look more likely that you will have girls, but I don't know whether that's actually scientifically accurate.
Seems like bollocks. Like,
I think it is bollocks.
I mean, I'm intrigued by that, but I don't know. Like now that we've got a girl, I'm less worried. I'm less worried about the second one, because the main problem was that like we really struggled to come up with boys' names we didn't hate, whereas girls' names we've got a few lined up. We've got a few spares. Actually, can I tell you this thing? Just to be even more distracted from football. So we're in a antenatal group. We were having like online meetings, you know, kind of like, oh, this is what to expect, blah, blah, blah. And like meet some people in your area who are also having babies. And there are loads of them. We're in a super yummy mummy area. And the first baby was due this week. And so Emma and I sat down and we made predictions for what everyone in our group would name their baby. And the first couple, I was like, I don't know why. I haven't thought of this name in 15 or 20 years, don't know anyone called it, but I really feel it's going to be Michaela.
Okay.
Right, okay. So you know, quite an offbeat name.
Yeah,
it's not
down the beaten track, as it were. Yeah.
Exactly. I was just like, you know what? They're South African. I don't know why, but that swings me in this direction. I was just like, Michaela. And a baby arrived on Tuesday. Text went round the entire group. Guess what the baby's called?
It's called bloody Michaela, isn't it?
It's called Michaela.
That's incredible.
I know. And I was just like, I think that I have...
you develop psychic abilities, yeah.
Exactly. I think I've got the gift of sight. So if anyone wants to know anything that's going to happen to them in the next year, then hit me up and I'll make a prediction. We could do that on Cameo or on Patreon or something.
Love it.
I'll be a Patreon psychic.
Well, that's quite a useful skill for today's podcast episode, actually. Oh, we're looking
look
ahead
at that.
As well, aren't we? Getting it back on track.
That is a professional segue there. Yeah, today we're going to talk about a big star that each of the Premier League's big teams could sell. So going into the summer, who could they look to sell from their current squad? Who should they look to sell? And because, look, obviously we understand the Big Six is kind of a bit of a myth this season. But frankly, it makes life easier for us to imagine a Big Six when we're trying to structure a podcast. So that's what we've stuck to today. Unfortunately, when it comes to teams like Man City, top of the table, no complications here at all. So, Duke, shall we start with City, the league leaders, looking at their squad? Do you have an obvious candidate for who you'd try and sell going into this summer?
It was fairly difficult, I think, with City. Obviously, they've, you know, swept all before them since about mid-November. They're flying in the Champions League as well. I think they've got a very good chance of going all the way in that competition as well, despite drawing Bayern Munich in the semi-finals if they get past Dortmund. So there's not major holes. I was probably thinking that the area that I'd look to buy if I was them would probably be left back, which means that I was probably thinking that you want to get rid of one of Benjamin Mendy or Alexander Zinchenko. And for me, the player has to be Mendy, really. I mean, he's 26 now. Pat, I'll ask you a question. How many games do you think he's missed since he joined the club with injury? Christ.
Oh, my God. When did he join? Was it 2017?
July 2017.
Okay, so how many games would there have been in that time? Like 140?
So it's about 50 a season, yeah.
Yeah, so, oh my God, it's going to be like 90.
He's missed 125.
What?
With injury since the start of 2017-18, which is absolutely mad. And
I know he's got like 600 minutes this season or something rubbish.
Yeah, not been used at all. And yeah, I mean, Pep in recent months has used Joao Cancelo out of position as a left back, although what even is out of position for Joao Cancelo is probably just one of the most versatile players in Europe at the moment. Zinchenko's gone ahead of him as well and played very well when he's come in. He, you know, obviously can move into that midfield role really well as well, in that sort of hybrid role that Pep loves to use Joao Cancelo on the right-hand side for. And Benjamin Mendy just hasn't really got a purpose anymore. He's now 26 years old, and he's one of the few absolute flops of the Pep Guardiola reign, really, in terms of incomings. I think a lot of people before this year were pretty harsh about Rodri, but I think he's really come into his own in the last few months as well. Bernardo Silva, obviously, was, for a large amount of money, very successful. Riyad Mahrez has been brilliant this year. So Benjamin Mendy feels like, of those £50 million signings, the worst by quite a distance. He's made 8 Premier League appearances this season. He's been fit since the end of November as well. But yeah, he's firmly third in the pecking order. And his numbers are really sort of quite troubling as well. Just 0.3 dribbles per 90, which is terrible, and less than half of his numbers from 2018-19. And guess how many key passes per 90? Just 0.1. So every 10 games he creates a chance, which for a player who was famed for his wonderful left foot during his time at Monaco and Marseille before that, this just really isn't good enough. And they're going to have to take a massive loss on him. He's valued at just under £20 million by Transfermarkt, but sometimes, for a variety of reasons, it doesn't quite work out. And his injuries have been really bad. His discipline's been very bad. I think he's fallen out with Guardiola at points as well. And although he's a very popular member of that dressing room because he's an enormous character, I feel like Mendy is probably the player in this fantastic star-studded squad, that needs to go this summer. So it's with a heavy heart because I think he's a nice player, a nice person, and has got great attributes, but I'd look to move him on this summer.
My player was exactly the same guy.
Like,
I think it just has to be. Like, yeah. He's not sufficiently young to warrant like giving him another few years. He's probably still got a little bit of value. I'm not sure who to, but you know, you could imagine selling him to that. Like, there are rumors that someone like Kolarov might leave Inter, and Inter might be looking for a left wing back, and you can kind of imagine that a role like that might get the best out of someone like Mendy. But frankly, the only way to get the best out of him at this point is going to be to keep him fit, and it just doesn't seem to be possible. It doesn't seem to be on the cards. Like, I mean, like you say, I mean, his defensive output has never been spectacular. It was okay at Monaco, but at the moment, I think it's like 2 tackles and interceptions a game. And while his passing numbers are all right, if I'm looking for a guy in that left-back slot who helps me maintain possession in the final third, recycle, occasionally finds a killer pass, I'm going to pick Zinchenko. If I'm looking for pure defensive output, maybe that is where you use a Laporte or an Ake or something. But even then, you wouldn't want to, you know, pin your hopes on Mendy doing a job on an elite winger. So I just think I'm not sure what he offers at this point. And if I were looking at City's back line, you know, going into a matchup with them, I'd think, yeah, you know what, where we can get at them is this left back slot. I'm not sure how much money you would get. Maybe 20 mil.
Yeah.
He's not 27 yet. So there is probably some money to be had there, but I don't know, like, unless PSG take an interest or somebody, but you've really got to have a strong belief that you're going to be able to fix his injury issues.
Yeah, 100%. I think he's the obvious candidate. I'm trying to look through the other members of their squad. It feels like Aguero is almost certainly going to leave. I think Fernandinho is going to sign a new deal, despite being, what, 35 now? Maybe even older, actually. So there's not that many players that you'd want to move on, and they've got some great options coming through as well. Obviously, Phil Foden has really leapt to everyone's attention this year. I mean, Ferran Torres started spectacularly well, but he's just been sort of displaced by Mahrez's brilliant form. So, you know, Man City's squad, except from that striking position, are in a really strong position to continue to dominate English football for quite a while, I'm afraid.
Is there any sum of money that would get you to sell somebody like Bernardo Silva? Like, I know everyone loves Bernardo Silva, and actually, I was shocked to see how many minutes he played this season. It's about 1,700 in the league. Mm. But I think he's got 5 goal involvements. Since that season a couple of years ago where some people, cough Chris Hamill, claimed that he was, you know, the second or third best player in the world, he really hasn't kicked on. And I understand that obviously you want to keep him at the club, but given that he's not, you know, absolutely integral to Man City, there's got to be some sum of money at which point they're willing to sell. And there were rumours that, you know, Barcelona, I mean, obviously Barcelona now don't have any money, but there were rumours Barcelona were going to offer, you know, 80 to 100 mil for him. And I thought, well, I understand you don't want to sell him, but for 80 to 100 mil for a guy who's not integral to your side, like, you probably take it. Like, that's really good money.
I mean, 100%. Especially, I mean, it depends who you're bringing in with that money. I mean, if you could sell Bernardo Silva and bring in Erling Haaland, you 100% do that in a heartbeat. But I wouldn't just sell Bernardo Silva unless the money was exceptional, without a clear replacement lined up in his position, or an elite player coming in another position. Like, if they could sign, you know, basically Erling Haaland, if they put that money towards an Mbappe-level player, then you'd 100% do that. But I'm pretty happy with how Bernardo Silva's developing. Even though his role has changed a lot in the last, like, couple of years as well, we've seen him play in a much more defensive system in the last couple of months as well. When De Bruyne was out, it was Gundogan that was pushing forward a lot more, and Bernardo Silva would tuck in alongside Rodri as well. So he's really versatile. He's a useful member to have in that squad, and apparently he's an excellent character as well. So I wouldn't sell him in a heartbeat, sell him very quickly, unless the money was spectacular.
Fair enough. Well, shall we move on to Man United then? I mean, which is a bit of a difficult case, because there are plenty of players I would sell at Man United, but I don't think they quite fit the bill here, because they're not really stars. They're just guys who, like, are no longer that important. So, like, Nemanja Matic, if someone offered money for him, would you sell him? Of course you would. But there are some interesting assets here, and there are some interesting possibilities for Man United going into the summer. I mean, obviously the goalkeeping situation remains up in the air. You imagine they're going to look for a striker. Not quite sure what's going to happen there. Midfield needs a little bit of a rejig. Rumours that guys like Donny van der Beek are unhappy. And of course, someone like Jesse Lingard is out on loan. So, Dukes, did you have an obvious candidate here, or have you had to struggle through the squad to find somebody?
Yeah, I thought this was actually probably the hardest of the top six, to be totally honest. I mean, I was tempted to say Anthony Martial, just because he's got proper value, whereas some of these other players that we're mentioning don't. And he has had a really bad year, and he's had so many opportunities as this central number nine now, and just doesn't seem to function very well with Bruno Fernandes. And Bruno Fernandes is going to be the fulcrum of that side for the next 2-3 years, and probably their key to, you know, getting back up to challenge for major honours. So you basically need a striker that works well with your most creative player, and Anthony Martial and Bruno Fernandes' relationship just doesn't seem very good. However, he's now injured. He just got injured at the weekend playing against Kazakhstan for the France national team. And I think Cavani looks like he's going to leave as well, with Boca Juniors potentially interested as well. And his dad said some quite mysterious comments a couple of weeks ago as well. So Cavani might leave, so you definitely don't want to sell Anthony Martial. I also thought Lindelof, you know, whilst I wouldn't want to, you know, have him as the fulcrum of a defensive partnership alongside Maguire. He's actually a perfectly like acceptable rotation option. Wouldn't sell him. And Donny van de Beek, for me, has to be given more time because he's not really been given an opportunity yet. So for me, even though I can't really see anyone, you know, one of the big clubs doing it, I'm sure you could get a Portuguese club or maybe even a Russian club to pay some money for Matic. At 32, he's probably got two more years, maybe three more years in a league outside of the top five. And I just feel like Matic is actually a major problem now in this side, to be honest, because he doesn't do his job well enough, and the balance he offers to that side, it is not really good enough as well, because they have to then play a Fred or a McTominay alongside him, and then you're basically taking out a more attacking player from somewhere further forward. And just 15 Premier League appearances this year, and if you could get even £10 million for Matic and use that money to try and sign a Bissouma, or I don't know, a Benacer. I think Brozovic has got 1 year left on his contract after this year. Try and put that money towards Wilfred Ndidi even, then I'd 100% do that. But I feel like Man United's priorities this summer are probably going to be centre-back and striker or right-winger as well. So I feel like that midfield is just going to allow to continue this sort of current malaise it's got. And I feel like Matic is central to that. He was a great player back in his day. He's just no longer the player he was, and I'd look to sell him.
Yeah, I mean, I'd definitely sell Matic. Like, as I've said, like, there are lots of guys in this team I'd happily let go. If somebody came in with good money for Martial, I'd probably sell him, even though I like the player.
Mm.
But to me, the guy I've gone for, though, is I probably would sell Pogba.
Really?
Assuming you can get good money for him. Like, he's 28 now, and obviously, as normal, passing numbers, exceptional. Like, really, really good progressive passer. Actually, really good at receiving progressive passes as well, since Bruno Fernandes has joined. Really good dribbler. Pretty good goal-scoring, creative output throughout his time at Man United. Not exceptional this season. In fact, like, relatively low for him. But I just think that given his age and given the wages he commands, he needs to be someone who I want to start every single game. You know, if I'm Man United manager, he needs to be a guy who I think, like, yeah, we absolutely play Pogba every single game we can. And I know that Man United have had some struggles without him lately where the pressure has all been on Bruno Fernandes. But I do think that that can be helped by bringing in a proper right winger. And I do think that the balance in this midfield, as you've kind of said there, is still really off. Like, I mean, there's because you've got, you know, Bruno and Pogba, maybe it draws attention to how untalented the rest of the midfield is. And I'm not saying that, like, Fred does nothing, though I am kind of saying that about Matic at this point. And McTominay, jury's out. Like, he doesn't really do much of anything, but, like, it's fine to keep him and see what he turns into because he's still young. But, like, it just seems to me that, like, for the price of a Pogba, I'm not sure how much money you get for him, but if you could get, like, 60, 70 mil for him, you have to sell him, I think. Like, that would be so good. And at that point, you could turn that into a starting midfielder and probably a young midfielder who might turn into something else. Or you could turn it into a midfielder and, you know, maybe the cost of a winger, as long as that winger isn't Jadon Sancho. Like, I think there's actually quite a lot that you could do with the Pogba money and a lot you could do with the Pogba wages. Mm. And at this point, the wage situation, I know we say, oh, it's Man United, it's not a problem for them. But, you know, De Gea's wages, Pogba's wages, like, this is a lot for them to carry for guys who are not, you know, setting the world on fire at the moment. And I just think I'd probably think about, like, what comes next. I don't think that Pogba, unless Man United go out this summer, produce a bunch of money from nowhere and manage to buy, like, you know, Haaland and Sancho, I'm fairly sure that United are not going to win the title in the next couple of years. And if they're not going to win the title with Pogba in the side, why keep him? Like, what's he there for? I would move him on and start building the next title-winning Man United side. And I just simply don't think it contains him.
That's interesting. I mean, you've swayed me there. It's a very persuasive argument. I think what's also crucial is that you could use that 60, 70 million, as you say, to get in a Sancho, a Haaland, an elite centre-back, an elite defensive midfielder, and then use the minutes that Pogba has got this year and give them to Donny van de Beek, because at the moment, his lack of minutes is a bit of a problem. Yes. You know, he was stolen from under the noses of Real Madrid. Every top club in Europe was supposedly interested in at some stage. I think Juventus were after him as well. Man United got him, and they just haven't been able to use him because they haven't been able to find a place in their side because Matic isn't good enough to hold the midfield by himself. Fred isn't, you know, consistent enough to do that either. Neither's McTominay. So they end up playing two of those, and you know, then you've got Pogba, Bruno and Donny van der Beek to fit into a side, which has meant Pogba's often had to play on the wing and Donny van der Beek just hasn't had a look in. So if it means that Donny van der Beek starts getting used rather than just becomes, you know, another sort of white elephant in their squad, then potentially I'm for it.
Yeah, I think the thing is about Donny, you know, no matter what misgivings, you know, fans or even Solskjaer may have about him, he's clearly good enough to be the second attacking midfielder at Man United.
Absolutely.
And I just feel like the difference between Man United and a truly elite side is not Paul Pogba, clearly. I don't think losing Paul Pogba really pushes them that much further away from like the genuinely elite sides. Whereas I think getting in a really top-class defensive midfielder potentially could be the difference between them and a truly elite side. So, yeah, I don't know. Again, it depends on the kind of money floating around, who's interested. I don't think you sell Pogba for a pittance, but he doesn't have long left on his contract now. They triggered the automatic one-year extension, right? And does that mean his contract expires next year or the year after?
I think it's still next year, but
it's next year.
I think it's next year, yeah.
Yeah, so you need to be thinking about selling him now, and I would just go ahead and do it because, yeah, like I say, I think Pogba has more often for Man United been a problem than a problem solver. And that's not just down to him. That's down to the managers as well and the style that they played. But I think it's probably time to move on if somebody is still willing to find some cash for him.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Cool. So what should we go to next? Should we go to Chelsea?
Yeah, why not? Chelsea.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so, I think Chelsea's... Sorry, Pat. Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I think Chelsea's quite a tricky one in that, again, with lots of these clubs, it depends where they're looking to strengthen. You know, if they are looking to bring in a centre-back, then I'd probably consider getting rid of one of Christensen and Zouma, even though Christensen has actually been really good in the last month or so. If they bring in another central midfielder, I think they want to get rid of probably Jorginho, who's the midfielder to go in that slot and hopefully give more minutes to Billy Gilmore. If they bring in a striker, then Giroud probably has to go because I don't think you want to cut your losses with Tammy Abraham just now. I think you want to give Timo Werner more time as well. So all those players could be, you know, heading for the exit door depending on who comes in. But I think the player that will almost definitely leave that you could get £15 million for this summer is Emerson Palmieri. Third choice left back by a distance, third choice left wing back as well, behind Marcus Alonso and Ben Chilwell. And when you put such an investment into Ben Chilwell, and I think in the last couple of months with Tuchel's arrival, it doesn't look like he's necessarily going to be first choice, which could be a bit of a problem. He was very much Frank Lampard's signing. That's a bit of an issue. But Emerson is mainly being used in the FA Cup. He did obviously get that fantastic goal against Atletico Madrid the other day in the Champions League as well. There's a lot of Italian sides. I think Inter Milan and Roma are said to be interested with him as well. And he's kind of just a sort of relic of quite a weird transfer period for Chelsea, where I think it was Bakayoko coming in, Zappacosta, Morata, Jorginho, all these sort of Italian-influenced players that came in for big money at the time and haven't necessarily all completely worked out. So Emerson would be the player at Chelsea that I'd get rid of.
Interesting. I mean, I feel like you've generally gone slightly less controversial than I have. I think that's fair to say.
You're chopping a big one.
I'm chopping Jorginho.
Fair.
Is he a big one? Like, I don't know. I think you're absolutely right, like, in your analysis about, like, it kind of depends on who they're bringing in. I agree that I would certainly keep Tammy Abraham, though I also think that if they do go and get a striker, they probably are going to have to sell Tammy Abraham, just because he's going to be furious, you know, that he hasn't got enough minutes. I think the ideas about them letting Timo Werner go seem very silly, though on the other hand, I suppose if you could do some sort of swap, Timo Werner plus cash for Haaland, you probably do it. Like, I mean, yeah, it's kind of fair enough. But Jorginho to me is a player who, it's a style of player I don't like. But he also seems like he's still got some value. It looks, every summer we hear that clubs in Italy are still interested in Jorginho, you know, Inter are interested in him, Juventus, yeah, are interested in him, or Napoli might bring him back, and you think, okay, well, what do we lose by letting him go? And I think at the moment he's filling in a useful role. You know, obviously something we've seen with Tuchel is he likes that guy who's really a bridge between the defence and the midfield, you know, who can kind of step into the back line, who's a defensive presence in the midfield and a passing presence in the back line, I suppose. And Jorginho can kind of do that. Christensen's also done it a bit as well for Tuchel so far. It's the Julian Weigl role. But fundamentally, I think Jorginho is physically limited. And his passing, while excellent, is not... It's just not enough, I think. You know, like, he is a very good passer. But this season, Kovacic is doing a better job with progressive passing than Jorginho is. And I don't feel... And while Jorginho has more tackles and interceptions, I still see him... players running past him a lot, you know? Like, I think a lot of the time he's not making tackles and interceptions because he just literally is so far away from the ball that he's not in a... You know, he's... Sometimes, you know, like, yes, he's got a good tackle success rate when he tries tackles, but often he's just simply not in the picture.
Yeah, his turning circle's really bad. He's like the evergreen, the ship in the Suez Canal at times.
Yeah, he's just a good Xhaka. Like, he's a better Xhaka. Like, he's more reliable than Xhaka on the ball, and he's got better defensive output, but he's smaller physically. And fundamentally, he's got more market value. I think he's shiftable. So I probably would look to shift him. I think that they do need a central midfielder. I love Kovacic. I love Conte, though. I think, you know, he's having a little renaissance at the moment, but the physical decline is clear and has been clear for a couple of years now. And that's unsurprising given the peak he hit. You need to be thinking about what's next in the engine room there. Obviously, you know, if you could sell Marcus Alonso or something, that's fine. Like, you know, you've got like Ben Chilwell, I think we all know, is going to be the first choice eventually. Reece James is going to be a first choice eventually. So I don't think those are real problem positions. And the front line for the time being, okay, maybe if somebody offers big money for a Ziyech or something, you take it. But there's nobody else I'd really want to sell among their attackers. I love all their attackers, and they're all really young. Well, except for Giroud. So it just seems to me like Jorginho is an obvious place where you can get some cash.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, he was definitely my slot in midfield as well. I feel like Kovacic maybe hasn't quite hit the heights of last year, where I think he was Chelsea's player of the year as well. But he's a very, very solid player and someone you can base it around. I think Billy Gilmour's looked really good in the limited minutes he's got as well. And then their forward line, as you say, unless someone offers big money, I think Havertz has started to play much better as well. Mason Mount's obviously been phenomenal this whole year. So they're in a pretty good place. Obviously, they'd want to work on a bit of their chance creation. They need to be more clinical in terms of their finishing as well. Timo Werner has not had a good year finishing-wise. But the signs are there for Chelsea that... I think they'll be Man City's probably strongest contender next year, unless Liverpool have the window of all windows and manage to shift some of an increasing amount of deadwood in their squad. So I think Chelsea are very much, at the moment, I'd say, strong favourites for second next year.
Woof. I mean, I kind of agree. Like, their defence at the moment is just so incredible that it's got to power them to something. But should we move on to Liverpool then?
Let's do it.
Should we move on to Liverpool? Liverpool is a tough one, I think. I look at this squad. I mean, the problem is, like all these squads, we're not just saying there's one player who could be sold. Like, I'm looking at Liverpool now and I think, well, Wijnaldum's probably going to go, and I wouldn't care if I were a Liverpool fan. I'd certainly, like, if somebody offered money for Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, would you take it? Sure. Would you sell Shaqiri? Definitely. Would you sell Origi? My God, I'd have someone's hand off if they'd offer money for Origi. So I'm wondering whether you've gone for one of those guys or whether you've gone for a bigger name, Dukes.
I've gone bigger.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. He finally enters the fray as a heavyweight in this discussion. Yeah, I've gone big. Milner could definitely go as well, but who's going to pay any money for a 35-year-old? He's looked pretty done this year, which is sad because he's been such a phenomenal Premier League player. He's just been so good for Liverpool. What a free signing. But Milner hasn't been great either. Origi, as you say, got to go. Doesn't look like he's ever going to be good enough for Liverpool. So if you can get £10-15 million for him in this market, it's probably quite a good deal. I think Dortmund are considering Origi as well for some weird reason. But the name that I think has to just go is just Bobby Firmino. Just 100%. He's been such a phenomenal servant for Klopp. I think he's Klopp's second most used player of all time behind Neven Subotic. But
what?
His record... Yeah.
That's amazing.
I know. I wrote a scout report on Firmino recently, so the numbers are kind of hot in my fresh in my mind, I should say. I think he's missed around 20 games over the last three seasons with injury, so really, really solid record. 0.5 goal contributions per game under Klopp as well, but just 34 goals in 137 games for Liverpool since 2018-19. The year before was the year that he did very, very well, and I think it's got about 24 goals as well. But since then, declining goal output, particularly noticeable in the Champions League. I think he's got 5 goals in his last 27 Champions League games, which is around the, I think that's the same number that Alisson Player got this season in 7 games. And yeah, only missed 22 games, that's the exact number, sorry, out of a possible 253 since 2015-16. So there's an element that he might just be suffering with burnout, but to be honest, I think it's not just that he looks tired. I think his just abilities just don't seem like they're quite what they were. His shot accuracy has dropped massively from 43% in 2017-18 to 36% this term. That's lower than Ivan Cavallero of Fulham. He's created over 20 fewer chances than Mane and Salah since the start of 2018-19 as well. So his shooting is down, his creativity is down. But I know what everyone's going to say. Oh, he's still such a phenomenal worker. He's such a, you know, great defensive presence at the front. He's not really even that anymore, to be honest. His pressures per game have gone from 24 in 2017-18 to just 16, which is good, but it's not exceptional. That's the lowest of the three main, you know, the fabled front three at Liverpool. And his success rate when pressing as well has fallen to 29%, 6% lower than Mane. So I'm not really sure what Firmino is bringing to the table. Obviously, you still get phenomenal moments of, you know, he's got very good control. He's very good at in and around the box of making space. That phenomenal assist the other day for Mo Salah, I think in that Leicester game, just showed that he's got enduring quality as a player. But he's not the worker he once was. He's not as creative as he once was. And he's certainly not the goal scorer he once was. So for me, he needs to be sold this summer. And I'd also sell Origi, bring back Harvey Elliott on loan, and play him wide on occasion and try and sign a striker as well and get more minutes to Diogo Jota as well, who's been... I think everyone expected Diogo Jota to be good, but I don't think anyone expected him to be this good this early for Liverpool. So things aren't looking too bad for Liverpool if they make some big decisions this summer. And I also saw them linked with Daniel Malen this week as well, which is really promising. Exactly the sort of player that they should be linked with. There's obviously that story going around at the moment that they're chasing Ibrahima Konate, according to David Ornstein, The Athletic. So these are the sort of signings they need to make this next great Liverpool side, because it's been 3 or 4 years of exceptional performances, you know, spearheaded by the likes of Bobby Firmino, but it's time to go. And I don't think there's any time, there's no room for sort of romanticism in this. I think Klopp needs to be quite brutal.
Yeah, I think that I agree. I had Firmino as well. He's about 6 months away from his 30th birthday. Like, this is what I was saying the other day, which is that I think that it's... People constantly, I think, like, misidentify the issues. Or rather, I have a similar thought process to people, but they seem to arrive at a completely opposite conclusion. And I think the weird thing about, like, a guy like Firmino is they say, like, oh well, he's had a bad season, are Liverpool gonna have to sell him this summer? And I think, hey, he's had a bad season, like, Liverpool might be forced to keep him this summer. Like, that's the problem. I think Liverpool were probably banking on selling him this summer. I think that in a world without COVID, Liverpool would have hoped that last summer or this summer somebody would come in with a big tasty offer for one of their front three, and they wouldn't want it to be Salah, they wouldn't want it to be Mane. But if the money was big enough, then they'd probably take it. And I think that they're in a little bit of a pickle because they've got a great buying model. We all know that. But all along, we've been wondering what it will look like when they start having to sell this team to build the next one. And in a way, we've still got no answer on that, because the time when they were going to sell has arrived and no one's got any money to buy from them. So that's a little bit interesting to me. the question may end up being on Firmino, how much is enough for Liverpool to sell? Because if you might get offered enough to tempt you, but not so much that you can justify it to the fans. So, for instance, if somebody offered 50 million for Firmino this summer, I think you'd take that if you're Liverpool. I think that'd be a sensible amount of money to take. But you could see Liverpool fans being up in arms and saying, well, there was a time we could have got 90 million for him, and now we're selling him for 50. What are we doing?
But there's no point for those Liverpool fans. Like, you've got to just appreciate that the market is completely different to any other market that we've ever had in football. I was thinking that I'd accept as low as £35 million for Firmino. Genuinely, like, I just think his time has seemingly gone. And in this market, £35 million is going to be a lot of money. And you need to create space in your squad. You need to get your funds flowing, as it were. And you know, harsh decisions need to be made. And yes, they've probably lost out on at least £50 million there, as you say. I think it's probably true market value is closer to 50. But you've got to move with the times. And if they have to sell Firmino to bring in the next leader of that attack going forward, I think it's got to be done.
Well, to play devil's advocate for a moment, like, his numbers are down, but they're still very good. I mean, like, 0.6 non-penalty expected goals and assists per 90 minutes this season. That's about where it's been the last few years. His finishing has been worse this year and last year than it was the 2 years before that, but that could be coincidence. The team as a whole has got worse, and so yes, his progressive passing has gone down a little bit, his chance creation has gone down a little bit, but obviously thanks to expected goals we can see that the quality hasn't gone down at all. In fact, the quality's gone up a little bit, and you'd expect him to have some struggles there. And even with his defensive work rate going down, it's still pretty good. Like, I mean, I think he's still around the kind of top 25, top 20% of forwards for defensive output. Like, this isn't bad. It might not be elite, but it's not necessarily bad.
But if you don't sell him this summer, you've got a major issue next summer. You've got a major issue the year after that, when all your front three are over at the age of 30. Like, they have to make the harsh decisions now. You'd probably want to sell Mane over Salah, but you definitely wouldn't want to sell Salah. So the one that's got to go is Bobby Firmino. And Diogo Jota has been, I would say, equally, if not better than Firmino when he's been fit to play. So I just think it's a no-brainer.
And I agree. And I think the advantage of targeting someone like a Marlon is that it gives you total fluidity across your attacking line. The thing about Firmino is he kind of played, if you're playing front three, he played as a nine. If he played a 4-2-3-1, he could play behind the striker. But he was less positionally versatile than the others. If you get Malin in, Malin can play off the left or he could play up front. Salah has played up front before in a 4-2-3-1 or played off the right. Mane can play on both sides. Jota can play on either wing or up front. Like, I mean, you've suddenly got quite a versatile, fluid attack. Maybe not so much in a 4-2-3-1 as in a 4-3-3, but you've got an attack that pretty much can fit together in any combination and is going to work. Because everyone's fast, everyone's a one-on-one threat, everyone's creative, and everyone can score. And that probably is what Liverpool are going to look for when they do start reconstructing this front line. And especially if Firmino could be the difference in, say, you know, I don't know, the difference between not upgrading midfield and getting a cheapo forward versus maybe getting a really good midfielder and a forward or whatever it might be, I think that you probably have to sell him. I think I'd probably take 35 as well, but I think that's towards the lower end. I'd need to be persuaded at a lower level than that and probably look at his contract situation. But I think we're in agreement on Firmino. So shall we move on to... Should we go to Tottenham?
Why not?
Tottenham Hotspur. Okay, Tottenham. I mean, I think Tottenham's squad is really good. There are guys I'd sell, and I wouldn't have bought Doherty. I would happily sell, you know, a Lamella or someone. I'd sell a Moussa Sissoko or a Dier. Like, but I don't know. I think a lot of the problems in Spurs squad as well, like, are quite hard to identify, because guys like Moura and Bergwijn, I look at them and I think, you know what, like, for this third attacker, this guy on the wing, I feel like Spurs can do better. And then I think, well, is it though that these players are not good enough? I mean, maybe in Moura's case. Or is it just that that person spends their entire time defending and doesn't get to do any attacking, and that's why their numbers look bad? Like, I can't quite work it out. So I'm struggling on this one, Dukes. I probably need a little bit of help.
Okay, well, I looked at Doherty as well. I thought it would probably be quite unlikely that Mourinho would admit his mistake in signing him. Yeah. And so it might mean that Aurier leaves, but I think they will look at a right back. I think they could look at a centre back as well, obviously this summer, and that probably means that Joe Roden would leave on loan, even though I think most people have been pleasantly surprised by Roden in his limited minutes so far. But I think like the obvious player that just has to leave for the sake of his own career is probably Harry Winks. Not particularly exciting to mention, but yeah, 25 years old. He's made 25 appearances this term, but just 7 Premier League starts. Apparently Valencia are interested in him. Not really sure why, but Valencia do such weird business as it is. And yep. Valencia, it kind of depends on a few different factors. Obviously, Peter Lim runs the club there, but they're apparently they've been up for sale for years. Their debt's over 500 million euros. And there's a Malaysian crown prince that is looking to buy Valencia. I can't remember the name of his name. Can't remember his name, so I can't give you the details on that. But yeah, if that deal goes through, then the likes of Harry Winks will be top of Javi Gracia's list, apparently, who has apparently made himself so unpopular with Valencia fans this year. Javi Gracia, he's almost being chased out of the club. I think he didn't use one of their defensive midfielders for the first 3 or 4 months, called Uros Rakic, left the side so open. They've been a disaster in La Liga. They're very flattered. I think they're about 13th or 14th, but that position really flatters them. Their numbers are dreadful. Valencia are not a good side. And they're about to sign Harry Winks, who I think is a fairly limited player. although, you know, I don't want to be too harsh on him because, you know, he's 25 years old. Maybe he'll get slightly better, but it feels like he's a lower Premier League player, probably, or a lower top 5 league player. But, you know, fair enough to him. He just needs a new opportunity because Mourinho is certainly not using him this year.
Yeah, I mean, I'd definitely sell Harry Winks if somebody comes in with real money for him.
real money as opposed to Monopoly money.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, is 10 million real money? Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, the thing about Winks is, I'm not sure how to articulate this, because the thing is, I don't think he is a top player. But I think he actually may struggle even more on a middling side. Like, what Harry Winks does do is, when you've got a lot of possession and you're playing against a weaker team, he can recycle it. Mm. He can just keep giving the ball back to the forwards and they just keep playing downhill, basically. And so I think that in possession, for a dominant team, Harry Winks does have a use. The problem is, Spurs aren't a dominant team and they're not really a possession team either. And he doesn't do enough defensive stuff, and he's not, you know, like a game-splitting passer. So he doesn't do enough to justify his place in certainly Mourinho's Spurs side. But it makes me worry that if he were to go to a mid-table team, which also was not a dominant possession side, he would struggle to make an impact there too, because he's used to having the ball all the time. So I'm not quite sure what to do with Winks. But yeah, I mean, Winks I'd sell for like pretty low money. Like, if somebody offered 20, 25 mil, I'd definitely take it. I'd consider it at like 15 to 20. Maybe because he's homegrown, I'd say no. I'd happily sell Lucas Moura. I wouldn't mind that. Obviously, I'd sell Moussa Sissoko. Eric Dier. There's a part of me that feels like Eric Dier needs to be sold in a sort of, you know, Billy Bean kind of way. Like, he needs to be sold, because if he's at the club, then the coach is going to use him. So you've got to sell him so the coach can't use him.
Deny him from Mourinho.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe that's harsh on Dier. I don't think he's that bad. I think his passing has really come on this season. But I don't think he's going to be the centre-back of a Champions League-level team. I just don't think it. So I'll broadly agree with you on Harry Winks. But I would definitely sell Dier, Sissoko, Lamella, Moura.
I can't imagine a world where Mourinho sells Winks and Sissoko in the same window. And they also don't have that many central midfield, like out and out central midfield options. Now they've gone to a 4-2-3-1 and they've gone a bit more attacking in the forward areas. Bale's got more game time recently and Ndombele has dropped in. Like, Ndombele and Højbjerg is a really nice balance to it, I think. And Ndombele, obviously, with his passing range, his ability to create angles for, and mainly his just ability to dribble past players in the most bizarre positions, but he somehow does it. He's just the most dexterous midfielder. I think he's a phenomenal player to watch, but they don't actually have that much depth in central midfield. So maybe they'll keep hold of Winks for another year. Maybe they'll keep hold of Sissoko for another year. But yeah, it's definitely an area that they could potentially look to strengthen along with centre-back this summer. But the Dier thing's interesting in well, as well, because Alderweireld, what, has got probably 2 years left, and I don't know whether he'll last the whole of that at Spurs. So they're leaving themselves pretty short in that area if they get rid of Dier as well. I'd hope they'd finally land Skriniar this summer. Although whether he'd swap, you know, Inter Milan, who look likely to win the title this year, for Spurs, who are fairly unlikely to make the Champions League, even though they're only 3 points behind Chelsea, which is kind of bizarre, it is another question. So we'll see. I think there's going to be some weird happenings at Spurs this year, because Mourinho made so many noises that he's really unhappy with this squad yet again. For some weird reason, Mourinho not working well with this squad. I just can't get it.
Yeah, neither can I. I mean, like, just to slightly take issue with something you said, and also to take issue with Mourinho, of course. to have Lo Celso and Ali on the bench, you know, that's pretty
true.
That's
Lo Celso
pretty
can
good.
Play deeper.
Yeah, and so can Ali. Like, we forget that Ali had a time when he was playing central midfield, and a load of fans kind of got on his back because his goal and assist numbers went down. But he was still playing very, very well. He was still very useful. I think that as third and fourth choice midfielders go, that's about as good as it gets. But yeah, I think that what they do in the summer will be interesting, because it's one thing saying we're not going to sack Mourinho because it's going to cost us an arm and a leg. It's another thing giving him a load of money to change a squad, or giving him permission to sell players you like. That's a little bit more troubling. So, interesting times ahead at Spurs. Let's move on to Arsenal then. Let's wrap up with Arsenal. This is an interesting one. I'm going to go in here because okay. You definitely sell people like Willian if you can, but you can't. So you don't. Yeah,
you're stuck.
You know, you sell guys like Elneny if you can, but you can't. Well, actually, I don't know. We could probably get a few mil for Elneny in the summer, but I'm fine with keeping him around. So to me, the obvious candidates here are Lacazette and Xhaka.
Ooh.
Now, Lacazette, I don't particularly want to go. I think Lacazette's been excellent this season. He's been far better than Aubameyang, which is pretty funny given the position that our fans took on Lacazette last summer and Aubameyang. I think he facilitates the attack in a really good way. He's an intelligent player. He works hard. He's also a mistake Arsenal can't afford to make. You know, they've handed another big contract to Aubameyang, gave big money to Willian. Lacazette doesn't have long left on his deal. I think he's 29. Like, you can't give him a long deal into his 30s. You just cannot do it. You've got to, at some point, turn this attack over. And to me, that means selling Lacazette and deciding what Martinelli is going to be for the next couple of years. If Martinelli is going to be a winger for the next couple of years, you can buy a striker. If Martinelli is going to be a striker, you go and buy a winger. And that's probably what I'd do. I'd probably go and get a left winger. The other guy, Xhaka, I just think Xhaka needs to be sold for a similar reason to Dier at Spurs. Like, he's going to play. He's going to play all the time if he's available. Despite the fact that I think it should be fairly clear to anyone with a brain that Arsenal's best central midfield pairing would be Partey and Ceballos. Arteta just prefers Xhaka, and I do not know what has gone on with our fans, but our fans have decided they love Xhaka again, and I don't get it. Like, Xhaka will have good games, but, you know, people went on about, like, Ceballos' mistakes leading to that goal against Benfica. And that was embarrassing, but then in the next game, Xhaka made a mistake that led to a goal for Leicester. The next week after that, he made a mistake, not only that led to a goal, but basically scored an own goal, like, against Burnley. He's incredibly unreliable. Like, he's the problem with Xhaka is, and I've said this before, people who don't watch him will just toss off opinions about him which make no sense. People will say, oh, he's just not a good enough passer, or like, he's too one-footed, and he is very one-footed, but that's not necessarily a problem. Like, oh, they'll talk about, oh, he just passes sideways and backwards. None of those things are really true, though he is too one-footed. I do agree with that. I'll reiterate that. His problem is that he's stupid. He does stupid things all the time. And if you're stupid, you can have all the talent in the world and it's not going to matter. But especially when you're in central midfield. Central midfield is one of the most punishing positions. If you make a mistake in central midfield, it doesn't matter if you've done everything else perfectly for 89 minutes. If you make one mistake, you can cost your side the game, which is basically what happened against Burnley. That's not true in other positions. And I think that if Arsenal swapped Xhaka out for a really, really good central midfielder, that would improve them a lot. Now I'm not saying it would improve them the most. I do think getting more goals into attack is really, you know, like a probably their biggest need. But I don't know, if I could only sell one of these guys this summer, maybe it would be Lacazette, just because I don't want to give him a new contract. It's the contract situation that's troubling, and Arsenal are very stupid. But which of these guys makes the team worse now? It's Xhaka.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't consider Xhaka, to be totally honest. I could see what you're saying. He does make game-changing mistakes fairly regularly, consistently as well. Yeah. Doesn't seem to learn from them either. But I don't think it's a priority central midfield for Arsenal this summer. I would say,
really,
that there's other Deadwood in that squad that should go before him. I feel like you'll easily get fairly good money for Guendouzi. He's not going to play under Arteta. Clearly, he's had a massive falling out ever since that Brighton debacle and the Neil Maupay and how he reacted to that. I think he then misbehaved when he went to Dubai last year. Or, you know, it's all old news basically. But he's not going to feature under Arteta. He's been okay for Hertha Berlin. I feel like you could get £15 to £20 million for Guendouzi, which in probably 3-4 years will look like a mistake when he turns into a very competent central midfielder. But if you're not going to, you know, if you're not going to use him now, you've got to sell him. The second player that I would consider selling, which I think is a bit of a shame because he's been such a loyal servant for Arsenal, but I just don't think he's the same player anymore, maybe because of system, but is Hector Bellerin. I just don't think he's what he once was. And obviously he's had a horrific time with injuries, but his attacking output has pretty much collapsed. He's still very solid defensively. And maybe I'm just saying this because of you know, the success of the Kieran Tierney signing and how adventurous he is going forward, how energetic he is, how creative he is as well. And maybe that reflects poorly on Bellerin, but I feel like Cedric Suarez has played better than Bellerin this year. I think Callum Chambers had a fantastic game against West Ham recently as well, and showed that there is life beyond Bellerin. And if they could bring in another superstar right back this year, I mean, you've been linked with Hakimi, you've been linked with Tarek Lamptey. This week, you've been linked with Emerson of Real Betis as well, who's a defensive behemoth. And I just think all these players are better than Bellerin, and he does have suitors. I think PSG and Barcelona are interested in him. So I would offload Bellerin and Guendouzi before Lacazette and Xhaka.
I understand that, but at the same time, they're younger. And that is going to be an issue. You know, like, they're obviously good enough to play for the team now. I mean, Guendouzi, I kind of assume, is going to go. But the thing with Bellerin is, I don't think it's really a problem with the player that much. Like, I think that Arteta wants to play this inverted fullback system, right? He wants the right back to come inside and play like a central midfielder. And that just is not Bellerin's game. Like, Bellerin had his best periods at Arsenal when he was just asked to dominate a flank. You know, just, like, run up and down a flank, overlap, like, put balls into the box, occasionally get into the box himself. Like, he was really, really good at that. And so if you're going to play that way with just a right-back who's just, like, haring down the wing and overlapping all the time, then Bellerin can do it. And this season I've seen people, you know, criticise him for not overlapping. And I think, well, Cedric has often been played in easier games, and that's why he's overlapped more. Whereas Bellerin, you know, has been asked to drop into midfield more. And I think that just suits someone like Maitland-Niles a bit better. Like, I do think that if you were going to get rid of one of Bellerin or Maitland-Niles, with Arteta there, it would make more sense to get rid of Bellerin. Because Maitland-Niles is more of a central midfielder, has better defensive output, which you need in a back four, and also is a pretty good, you know, dribbler. So I think that it would probably make more sense stylistically. It just feels like Arsenal at the moment have got an athletic wing back who they want to play like an inverted fullback. That just doesn't seem like the right thing to me. So I definitely think that there's a stylistic issue there. I'm not sure guys like Emerson or whoever are the answer, unless Arteta would again change the way the team played. But I'm not sure who the answer is. To be totally honest with you, basically I just think that Bellerin is not one of my first positions to get upgraded, but I'm also completely open to the idea that Arsenal could sell him. So I think that's a perfectly good shout. So I'm pretty happy with the guys we've come up with. you know, our list of players there. You know, one way or another, there's a lot of work to be done this summer, so it'd be intriguing to see how much of it actually can get done with the market being the way it is.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be such a crucial summer for so many clubs in terms of, you know, trying to get some money into their accounts, etc. I think, you know, top clubs in Europe, I read last week, had lost over 1 billion euros. So there's not going to be that much money, which is why this podcast on who teams could possibly think about selling, I think is quite an important piece of content. And I enjoyed doing the podcast. So thanks very much for having me on, Pat.
Oh, well, thanks for joining me, Diggs. It's always good to have you here. Just before you go, I just wanted to say something about the football versus transphobia campaign, yes, which is going on this week from the 24th to the 31st of March, ending on Transgender Day of Visibility. This is a campaign run by Football v Homophobia. It's the third season that they've been taking this action, and the aim is to amplify the voices of trans people and allies in all aspects of football. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what this means for us, because I do think that as football fans, we should be in favour of the game being available to everyone and as many people having both the enjoyment of the sport and a voice to talk about it as much as possible. Like, to me, what football has done over the last few decades is, I think, just made the world larger. Like, that's something that football has always done, to the point that people from all different walks of life, from different parts of the planet, from different races, religions, can admire people from somewhere else. And it just seems to me like if we are in favor of football, we should be in favor of diversity and equality, and as a result we have to take a stand on transphobia and say that it has no place in the game, and that our trans brothers and sisters are our allies and our comrades in making football a better, more interesting, more exciting place to be.
Beautifully put. I couldn't add anything to that. I completely echo everything you've said. I think the global game has to represent, you know, society, and, you know, there's still massive issues in football in terms of representation, and, you know, this is an important step. So yeah, good luck for everyone taking part in this week, and well done for using this forum to big it up, basically.
Oh, well, please tweet about it, anybody, if you're interested in this. And as I say, I think we should all be interested in this. And I think you can check out more at footballvhomophobia.com. I can't remember if it's V or versus, but if you search football versus homophobia, you will find the website. Dukes, just before we go, is there anything that you'd like to plug?
Why don't you go check out Friday's Continental Club, where we discussed 20 million pound signings or less that, you know, top clubs in Europe could use this summer in light of the coronavirus pandemic and no one having any cash. So, you know, similar to today, but rather than selling, it was the cheap players to buy.
Oh, that's a really interesting one. One of my favourite ones to watch. So I'll check that out. Thanks very much to all of you guys for watching or listening at home. And we will see you. Will it be April? Yes, we will see you in April. Thanks very much. Bye.